You're on.
Thank you. I need it.
Can you hear us up there, Johnny?
Hey, I'd like to call this meeting to order, the Overton Power District Board Meeting in the Overton Office, January 17th at 3 p.m. Is there any public comment?
Judy, we have somebody who's speaking.
That's somebody that we're going to talk about a little bit later.
Okay.
So we can't identify them yet?
Not yet. It's going to be a secret. It's going to be a huge unveiling here.
Item C, acceptance of the agenda for possible action.
I move we accept the agenda for possible action.
It's been moved and seconded to approve this afternoon's agenda. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Item D, approval of the minutes of the previous meeting held December 13th, 2023.
I move we approve that too.
Oh my gosh, mine's hit the wall.
Hey, Dale seconds it?
No.
Somebody seconded? I'm pretty sure it was Dale.
I'm pretty sure.
Oh, it's Dale. Okay, good. Thanks, Dale.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded to approve the minutes of the previous meeting held December 13th, 2023. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Chair's report. I only have to report that in Portland, they have a terrible power company because a tree fell on my son's house on Saturday. And as of this morning, they still have not been able to get into their house because of the power company not taking care of the power.
Oh my goodness.
Wow.
So I told them nothing like that would happen here in Overton. So please don't ever let that. Otherwise, life is good.
Don't you guys let that happen.
Yeah.
We probably have less trees per person in
Portland. And actually, he lives outside of Portland in a place called Lake Oswego, which is covered by trees. Mm-hmm. So, nice big ones. And she wants to replant one when they get it all cleaned up. I'm like, you have to get rid of that.
A short one.
Anyways, seriousness. Item F, attorney's report.
I don't have a report at this time unless anyone has questions.
Okay. Item G, manager's report.
Okay, we'll first start with Scott and administrative services.
All right. So this is the month of the cybersecurity report. I will do some year-end reporting and some of the full year's worth of data. Cybersecurity training, we had 100% in the month of December. Phishing results, we did get, somebody did click on an email that we sent out. This was the email that we sent out that was clicked on. It had to do with health insurance. I guess they wanted to view the encrypted message, and so they clicked on it, and now they are in, what is it, Stephen, Clicker's jail, like Clicker's prison is what you call it. So they get another email stating that they have entered into Clicker's prison, and they get to do a lot more training. So, and the reason we do that is because we received 35,000 emails in December, 1,809 of those are spam. That is the firewall blocks by country. Server system uptime, 100%. Data backup and restoration, we are at 100% for the month of December. And then I'm going to do an annual thing that I report on, which is identity theft prevention. It's one of our policies that was approved in 2016. So it's the Red Flag Committee. The district will maintain a Red Flag Committee, which we have. The committee will meet at least biannually to discuss red flag changes and new threats, which we have. We've sat down and discussed those things. We didn't meet. We had training this year. The red flag committee will inform relevant staff of new alerts, warnings, notifications, and changes as they become available. And then at the end of all that, we have a report. Stephen Brown is the privacy officer, so he heads the committee. Put together a really nice report with membership changes, the different meetings that we had, the trainings that we had. And so that is something that I report on annually. It's done for 23.
Where does that report go to? You.
Go. Yeah, in the policy, it needs to be reviewed with the general manager written and a verbal.
So he knows
review.
Where we are.
Yep. So here are some of the year in totals that I can't get until the month of December ends. Number of incoming phone calls, year in totals. In 2023, we dropped down to 18,785 total phone calls, which is a huge reduction from previous years. So that's continuing to trend down. And then average phone calls per day, 73. Average phone calls per hour in 2023 was 9. And then inverse of that, which is really interesting, number of walk-in customer year in totals, 24,069, which is 4,000 more than we had in the previous year.
A couple of years ago we talked about this, and you said a lot of it, though, were people coming in wanting to chat. And is that still holding true, sort of thing?
Well, that's a lot of it. You know, in the beginning years, I would say 21, we were manually doing it. By hand, the CSRs would do a tick mark for everybody in and out. And then, I think halfway through 22, we had some automated meter put on. And so I'd say 23 is probably more accurate than anything, because we've got a whole year with that automated ticker that counts. But I don't think it's mostly people coming in to talk. It's paying the bill, setting up service.
Well, I think there's a lot of people that like to pay their bill because they like to visit with people when they pay their bill.
That's what you said a year or two ago, when we were talking.
Well, and we have a lot more customers now that are not trusting of the mail service or Dropboxes. They want to personally hand us the payments.
Yeah. And if you look at the speed, it's 18,752, which is a whole lot more than Overton. I don't know what that tells you as far as demographics. It's a lot more people. A lot more people.
Well, demographic-wise, isn't it more experienced in life?
Yes.
That are wise?
Yes, correct. That's what I'm saying.
You're going to compare, right? On the next. You're going to compare to communities, and this number should continue to grow as Mesquite's population continues to grow with the more experienced in life. And so that's just the reality. And that's the difference between Overton or Logan and Mott Valley and Mesquite,
wrong
too.
With Overton?
We're together. We got one high school.
Overton's got some growth there.
Oh, definitely.
Almost 1,000.
Over 1,000. Yeah, almost 1,000, yeah. And I think so that would put us at average walk-ins per day, 93 in the month, in the year 23, and that's 12 walk-ins per hour. Is what we're seeing.
Is that overwhelming the staff, or is it comfortable?
I don't know. What would you say, Christy? I think we're handling things pretty well.
We're handling things. We don't have a lot of times where there's a line. There does seem to be certain cycles that we have more walk-ins, and certain times of the month we have more walk-ins, and so there's occasionally they have to wait a couple of minutes, but for the most part, we don't have any lines. We're able to handle them as they walk in.
Is there anything that we can generate a report that's like how many are paying their bills, how many have a problem with their bill?
I think we might have to get back to the manual tick marks, which really isn't that accurate when you're putting phone calls and everything else that's happening on top of it.
Right.
Maybe do it for 1 month or something like that,
just to see what it is.
As a trial, maybe, or.
You guys, so what would you want to see on that?
Well, when you're mentioning this, I'm like, if it's people coming in to pay their bill, and maybe we want to try to encourage more to get them somehow automated paying their bill. But if it's people coming in with a problem, then,
So maybe the reason, just overall reasoning why they're coming in, what are the reasons?
Yeah, it'd be interesting to know.
It seems like a weird trend.
Yeah, I feel like we're getting more and more computer savvy. I feel like it should be going down.
So my first impression of this is we had a drop-off because of COVID, and now we're getting people that are getting back into their old routines.
Have we considered, like, parking meters?
There's
the customer service, I mean.
People that are dealing with cash. So they obviously.
Yeah.
Just curious.
What, if you want us to try that, I mean, I don't know how accurate.
I feel like if it gets to be a problem, or we're like, hey, we need to hire somebody, maybe we ought to look at it.
Okay.
And maybe you could just do it, how it's working, you say, talk to the people doing it, and say, okay, what kind of ratio do we have here? Mostly this or that? That's probably good enough. I mean, we don't need an exact number like 93, but we need to know, most of the people are coming in for X and...
Most of our customers are coming in for new service and for paying bills.
More establish a service.
Yes.
When pay their bill.
They are establishing service. We require all renters to come into the office so that we can go through the lease and the identity check and all of that. And so those people come in, pay their security deposits, and pay their bills. Mm. And with the tips and all of that in the industry of most of the jobs in Mesquite, there's a lot of cash paying people, so they walk in to pay their bills.
And that's my report.
You know, I really do appreciate the report, though, because this is stuff that a lot of times you never hear about and never even think about.
Yeah.
But it's important to our customer relations and business and everything. And so, and the security has become a big deal now. So nice we have that coming in.
Okay, thank you, Scott Randall.
Great. We do have some good news today. The Reed Gardner number 2230 line that we've been waiting to get started. NV Energy has received their UEPA permit, and Summit is the contractor that's doing the work, and they started working on the right-of-way roads, and all the materials that they've ordered have been staged on the right-of-way and near our substation in Moapa. So they should get going on that. We should have a schedule within the next 2 weeks, and I'll be able to share that at our next board meeting. We're hoping they'll be able to complete by March. March is kind of the key month for us to get this completed. Tortoise to Gila 138 line, we had our final review on our framing drawings, and we should receive our material list in the next 3 to 4 weeks, and then we can start bidding out materials and start working on a schedule when we can bid this project out. We started the grading at Raptor. First pick there, Stephen. So this is Raptor. We just started grading there, and we continue to grade, next slide, and we continue to grade on the long drive project. We have the details for the wall that are in the city for approval, and so we should be starting that retaining wall here in the next couple weeks.
How's the neighbors? How are they then with the work going on?
They've had a few complaints because the retaining wall is going to put, with the retaining wall and our wall on top, we're going to be about 11 feet to 12 feet out of the ground on the homeowner side. So it's going to be a wall there for those few homes. But
looking at some of the houses are elevated anyway, right?
A few of them are, but there's ones that are right on along that street. You can see the picture that are right there, ground level. And so they're
at the far end. Yeah,
yeah. And we've met with them in previous meetings, and we've done the best we could. We've given them options of picking the block, and they've have colors so they can look at something that they're more appeasing to them. But other than that, it's just progress, and they just have to accept that. And that's my report. Are there any questions? Okay, thank you.
Okay, Corey. Oh, you need this?
Yeah. Very good. So, January line operations report for the month of December for our hookups, we did 47. 46 of those were residential and one commercial for the month of December. Our quarter, we ended up with 112 for the quarter of total hookups. And left us at 398 for 2023. So we see that trend. We beat 2019, which was what I wanted us to do, so that we weren't back in the early stages. We see good steady growth over the last 6 years. Locates, we had 239 locates that were performed for the month of December, and 86 inspections. Outages, we had 3 planned outages for maintenance and 2 unplanned outages for a total of 5 outages that affected 22 customers for 23 customer minutes. That left us for our AC for December at 99.999. And if you want to throw one more digit on there, it was 8. So our safety program December was we're currently at 6 years, 3 months, and 4 days of no lost time accidents. And December safety topic was ladders, platforms, and steps. And then this is in December we had an outage up at this is at what we call the Vortac. It's just before you drop off the mesa coming from Overton to Mesquite. It's at FA site, and so we got this call trying to find out why, you know, the guys threw a fuse back in, blew. We knew we had a problem. They tried to troubleshoot that problem, and then we find out that our line locator then tells us that, hey, I had a locate up there several months ago, and when I showed up on site, the project was done. They had already finished, and so this is what the guys went up and said. Okay, we're gonna go excavate next to the post that they put in and see if that wasn't our problem. And this is what we found. Mm. So they had done the repair on their own. So live lines, number one. And 3 months later, the line faulted. So they waterproofed it. They put some good sticky tape on that and banded it. And so this is what it looked like when we got that back open. So it's older cable, and so that was an additional issue that now we put in that in our queue to get that wire changed out. But this is what we found, that someone was lucky, and they'll pay the price. We're billing them for all of the expenses that we've spent.
The contractor,
so it was the FAA was what they were the ones that called in to locate. They did all the work, but they had a contractor that so FAA said send us the bill. So how they handle it on their side, we can't go beyond that. But
sure. So did you just do a temporary repair on that to keep it in service?
So we did. We spliced it. We spliced it, and then we'll have to put in new conduit. So this is really shallow. You can see on the picture on the left here, because it's glitchy, it's hard ground, and so it'll be a good project to get that fixed up. But we need to do it. So I know that I've reported last month a little bit on the progress of our Overton training yard. Right out here, I don't know if you've seen it at the back of the lot. So, whenever they have a few spare time that they can plan to do a little bit of work on it, it's been an invaluable asset so far as we have utilized it already. And so this is just pictures of the guys as they built it. They're getting ready right now. These are apprentices that are on the pole and preparing to string conductor. And I love this picture on the left because it takes me back to it just always felt good to be on the pole like that. And then the string and conductor there on the right, and so that pole yard's coming along very nicely. Mm-hmm. And we've used it, and I'll show some pictures next month as a safety meeting. We utilized that training facility after safety.
With all our cranes that we now have, how often are we actually climbing poles versus using the crane?
So that is one of the purposes for the training yard, is because there's skills that you're not doing every day that you need to keep sharp, right? Because the one time that you can't use something or a method that we currently use, we've got to know how to do that the old way.
At least until all the poles get replaced and we no longer have wood poles.
Yeah, and I don't see that happening for a long time. Mm-hmm.
there's still times on wood poles where they'll, even though they have a truck there, they'll have a guy climb up the other side, so you don't have to keep moving the truck from side to side.
Is that what that is right there?
No.
So this picture right here was a job that was done down in Overton between Benelli and Cox, right, downtown Overton. Runs in the middle of property, this pole.
Oh, yeah.
Luckily, we were able to get trucks to this one. But we didn't have the ability. Usually what we'll use is an auxiliary arm or a way that we can get the phases and get them up out of the way so we can change the pole. So this method, the guys, this is the old pole right here. So they mounted these. This is what we call a chicken wing construction. And so the wires would have been on those three insulators right there. So they mounted an arm on that, put what we call layout arms, which are fiberglass insulated arms, and move the conductors all out to that so they could get the new pole in. And then and we actually left that as a construction unit we call a C1, which keeps all of the wires horizontal because we needed more height through the property. And so this was a different method than we usually use, but it would be something that we don't do commonly because of the equipment that we now have. And so this That also will be things that we're able to do in the training room. And so that we're not doing it live in the field, but that's our training. You know, you want to keep those skills going. And this is the same job. This was just finishing up the job, apprentice up, finishing up all the connections on the neutral and tightening things in there and cleaning it up. Riverside Road, this is just as you cross Bunkerville Bridge, going towards from Mesquite towards Bunkerville. It's up on the hill, and you can see here a picture on the left, the dirt was about 5 feet higher. It was just a big hill that was right there, and we needed to change this pole out. It was both maintenance as well as the customers upgrading the panel. But this pole is a do not climb. It has a right here. It has a red tag on it that says you can't climb this pole because it's rotten. And so this one was a challenge. So we went in and we cut the dirt down, and then got a truck in there to hold the pole while we then set this laid the phases out, got them all in, so we could set that pole in there. And then this is just some more pictures of that same project. It was a really good project. It's, you know, a little more technical and good to keep the skills going on those type of projects. And then finally, you had approved the skid steer, and Kat delivered that, and we swept the parking lot the first part of January with that skid steer. So Dowling is really happy right there. That's my report, unless you have any questions.
I got a question. It's off topic a little bit, but I just, in Moapa, they cleared a bunch of brush under the power lines right by the river.
Mm-hmm.
And watching them do it was a little painful. As they just were chopping it and taking it over to a chipper. Any thoughts about just getting a brush hog attachment for that and doing it ourselves?
So I've talked to Nick about a brush hog, and he's been using his skid steer, and he's going to get a brush hog attachment for his skid steer.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's already in the works.
Very good.
Yeah. Any other questions?
Okay, thanks, Corey. Kevin, you want to give us the sub-ops report?
Okay. So last month I reported that the Long Drive and Raptor Control buildings went out for bid. Those bids came back and both buildings were awarded to a company called ICC out of Salt Lake. The Long Drive building came back at $762,900 and the Raptor building came back at $823,865.
What was your
budget? That's about what we figured they'd be. Yeah, we had Falcon Sub came back right around those areas too, so that's kind of what we figured it would be for those two buildings also. So we've also received the results back from our oil testing from SD Myers. We tested 31 transformers and they came back with 5 recommendations, and out of those five, three of them I knew about would probably have that recommendation this year, so I've got in budget for already to have those taken care of this year. And the other two, one is just kind of a watch and retest in 5 and 6 months, so we'll take care of that. We'll retest it in 6 months and see how that those levels are doing. And then the other one is a transformer I've been concerned about. We're just going to keep an eye on that and look to get it replaced in the next 5 to 10 years. So, otherwise, we have pretty good reviews from SD Myers from those oil samples.
How did the regard the transformers, the 230 to 69?
The three at Tortoise?
Yeah, the three at Tortoise.
Those are the three.
The two older ones that are there. How did they come out?
Those are the three I'm going to do hot oil. Hot oil processing, yeah. Yeah, their interfacial tension numbers keep dropping, even though they've been hot oil pressed within the last 8 years.
Moisture content's been okay?
Yeah, moisture content's been good. It's just contamination, I believe, it's vapor.
So tell everybody what that interfacial tension number means.
So if you take a glass of water, you fill it up the top, and the water comes up, and it'll kind of go over the top of the rim. You've seen that happen? And then if you drop a little thing of soap in it, it'll kind of disperse and fall out, so it'll flatten out. The oil does the same thing. That interfacial tension actually keeps the water out of that oil in the same way that water would bubble up like that. So that interfacial tension, if it gets contaminations in there, it actually allows the oil and water to kind of mix a little bit, which is bad. And the reason starts decreasing is the oil's old or it's got contaminants in it. And the contaminants can be old paper, the paper is deteriorating, or other outside contaminants. But that's what we believe is those transformers are seeing some age and they're starting to deteriorate that paper. So
they were probably went in 63 to 65, so they're 55 years.
Yeah, they've served their life. So,
thank you.
Anyway, any other questions on those? Okay. We have the sub department. We host an annual training through Schweitzer Engineering Laboratories, and they send down two engineers down to do a 2-day training with us. And we invite our neighboring utilities to come, and this will be our 10th annual training for that. And they come in, and what we do is we send them the topics we want to talk about, we want to be taught about, and they send two engineers in and train us on those topics. So it's a really good course, it's really good training for us because it's basically what we want to talk about. And one of the topics is a fault that we had. They're going to come and analyze that fault and kind of walk through it with us. We've got 20 seats available in that, and we filled all 20 of those for those 2 days. So it's been really a good training for us. We're excited, and that'll be next week on Wednesday and Thursday of next week. So just want to let you know about that. And then this last one, well, it's not the last one, but I was out at Tortoise before sunrise last week, and I took that amazing picture, so I just thought I would throw it up there so you guys could see that. But you want to advance the next slide?
Yeah.
So our Falcon substation is nearing completion, and I like the overhead shots. It's pretty neat, but if you look at this section right in through here, this is the section that's already been, that's existing right now. This is what we have built out in the last few months. So that kind of gives you an idea of what's going on there. You want to hit the next one, Stephen? A little bit closer shot. So again, once again, this is what we've built out. This is going to be 4 bays that will be energized off of this new transformer. This right here is actually a temporary regulator setup for Crown. It comes all the way from Dinosaur down to Crown. They want regulators in between. The cables come here and pass on through, so we thought that would be a great spot for regulators. So Mads came up with kind of a plan to tie that all in, and he did a good job with that. So, next slide. This is the ground view of that. So this bus work
has all been done by our crew, and all we've got protection on there now, so hopefully we won't blow up reclosers from birds landing on them. And you know, they've done a nice job on connecting up the braids. The next one. One thing we've done at this substation, instead of welding these connections on, they're actually pressed on with a hydraulic press. And it's made it so that these guys, our line crew, is actually able to build this sub pretty quickly without having to have a welder come weld stuff up and go through that whole process. It's been quite quick for them to get that done and really effective. So we're excited to start that, and I think Corey's got the machine to do
press
that.
Has been ordered.
Press has been ordered.
We've got to rent it. That's 14. We got 14 months out on it.
Okay. So we've been renting the machine to do this with, but it's been nice because it's our crew doing this, and they've been doing a really good job. So I kind of wanted to show that. We're missing two pieces of bus, and I have been told that it should be in the end of this week or the first of next week, and they'll get that finished up. And I'm still hopeful that it'll be done before the end of quarter one this year. It'll be energized, so keep our fingers crossed. So anyway, next slide, Stephen. And that was my presentation. That's another shot of that sunrise.
Great shot.
Any questions?
Any new photo shoots for seniors?
I did it with my phone, so.
I just got to put it out the hallway.
Do you mean high school seniors or the experienced folks by our restaurant? All right. Thank you, Kevin. First on my report, I want to talk about we've had several federal updates with the organizations that we participate in. And, of course, the top issue is government funding. There are 12 appropriations bills. Four of those bills expire this Friday, and they haven't been funded yet. And then there's another 8 bills that expire on February 2nd. And we're hoping that our legislators can get those through without any problems or shutdowns. We have what's called the Farm Bill. It's a bill that's renewed every 5 years. It includes a lot of different components for farmers and water and irrigation, but a lot of energy issues also get pushed into the Farm Bill. And so we've been having our lobbyists actively participate in getting the Farm Bill renewed with the energy things that have been injected into that bill. But until they get the government funding bill done, the Farm Bill is going to sit idle for a while. So we're still working on that. The Democratic caucus has been pressuring FERC to get their transmission changes completed, because there are a number of large renewable projects that have been installed, and they're waiting for transmission right away, and they can't get transmission right away through anywhere. Mm-hmm. And it's become a real problem. One of those big projects is the TransWest project that goes from Wyoming to California, comes right through our area. All of those are on hold until FERC gets that transmission bill passed. Those are the big issues that pop up on the radar. Expectations are low with this being a election year, and with the appropriations bills, that there's not going to be much else that gets done. So that's our legislative update, and it's not a pretty picture. One of the things that we've been working on in regard to legislation, and this will be part of the Farm Bill. Stephen, if you'll pull up that letter to Stephen Horsford for me, please. So I told you last month that I sent letters to our senators regarding the Hydro Act. The Hydro stands for, I have to read it, Hydropower Delivery Rate Reduction Offset. That's a mouthful, but it comes out to the acronym HYDRO, which is appropriate. So this was formerly known as the Kelly Bill. We've been working on this at CRETA for about a year and a half. It was held up by some problems in Congress on the Senate side. Senator Kelly has picked this up. Senator Kelly from Arizona, along with Senator Sinema from Arizona, have pushed this through on the Senate side. And we have Celeste Malloy on the House side who's pushing that through. If you don't know Celeste, she's the new congresswoman from Utah that was elected in special election late last year. She actually grew up in HICO. So she's been a good friend to us and has responded to things for us. So we have, what we have here is we have two senators from Arizona who are lower basin people on the Senate side. We have somebody on the House side from Utah that's the upper basin and a Republican. So we're trying to cover all of our bases so that this will get pushed through. I've contacted Stephen Horsford. I've been in contact with Senator Cortez Masto's staff and Senator Rosen's staff, and they continue to work on these things for us. I've also talked to the lobbyist at NRECA who's also working on this. So hopefully this gets pushed through and doesn't get held up by the other problems that are going on in Washington, D.C. At the end of the year, we're required to submit our emergency response plan and our vulnerability assessment to the state. And I want to report that those were submitted on time and were completed for the year. I've also had our staff go through those so that we can start working on updates for this year. We met with the folks from Lincoln County Power District to discuss our exchange of assets. We made really good progress on our contract and had things pretty well sewn up. And then Kevin Hansen entered the discussion and talked about the transformers that were failing at Tortoise Substation. So now we've made good progress. We've got a lot of the other things tied up. Now what we're going to have to do is refocus a little bit and talk about how we want to reconfigure the 69 system at Tortoise. We have a 60 MVA transformer that's coming in. Lincoln wants to buy into that, so now we're reworking some things, and that'll take us a little bit of time to get that taken care of. But at the same time, I think it's good that we're doing this now while we're doing the contract, and it'll be all wrapped up. But that contract won't be done soon. We're hoping to have it done sometime this year now, not within the next few weeks. So a little bit of a change on that. I also want to report that we met with the staff from Boulder City. They came out here to talk about power contracts and how we were doing our power contracts. They are right now a full customer of Silver State Energy Association. They're looking to perhaps do something else. And as we talked with them, we decided that maybe there's a joint interest that as we renew our contract that maybe they could be included in that if we can get some economy of scale there that will help us on pricing. So we're going to talk to Morgan Stanley about that to see if that helps us at all. And if it doesn't, I guess Boulder City will have to plow their way through on their own. So
what type of loads do they have?
So they are actually a much smaller system than us. They peak in the summer at about 50 megawatts. And they have quite a bit of hydro, but the hydro doesn't meet all of their needs anymore. So they're working with APCO to fill the gaps in their portfolio. And they have some solar out in Boulder City, too, a lot of solar projects out there.
Will they be piggybacking on our contract somehow, or just would both be contracting?
Well, we're hoping to a certain degree we can piggyback, because when it comes to the generation portion and the transmission portion, we could certainly be together. But once it gets to Meade Substation, Boulder City picks their loads up immediately at the substation in Boulder at Meade, and so they could take their loads from there, whereas we have to go through the Nevada Power Transmission System and work with Nevada Power. So it's a little bit different after we get to Meade, but there are perhaps some things that might work on the other side.
What kind of costs do they have for
that? Being mostly hydro and mostly and being a municipal, they have their actual wholesale price is very low. But since they use it to subsidize parks and roads and different things in the city, their per kilowatt hour cost is pretty close to maybe even a little bit more than ours. I believe last time I looked at this, their kilowatt hour charge was higher than ours, but their base charge was lower than ours. And so there's a gap in there where if you use very little electricity, they're cheaper, but once you get over a certain level, then they become more expensive than us because of that. That's my report, unless you have any questions for me. Okay, thank you, Melissa.
Okay, the first thing I wanted to report on was that we had a ratings done by Fitch Rating System, and they announced on December 21st that they had affirmed our outlook at A and gave us a stable rating. And so I will just read the quick review of this just so you guys can understand what it is that they reported about us. For the Fitch rating, they asked for quite a bit of information from us. And the thing that is makes that somewhat difficult is that it's a very short turnaround. When they ask for it, we have a certain amount of time that we have to upload all of the information that they've requested. Then they give us a date that they will come call and do a review. We will send back emails with any questions or concerns from that phone call. And then they give us what they anticipate our rating is going to be. And we have 24 hours from the moment that we receive that to formally dispute if we want to or agree with. And so usually they're good at not sending that at Friday afternoon. But sometimes it could be Friday morning. So we've worked with them, got them all of the information. And so, again, they did send this out. So the affirmation of an A rating reflects Fitch's expectation that OPDVive's financial profile will remain very strong in the context of the strong revenue defensibility and very strong operating risk profile. While OPDVive's very low leverage ratio suggests a potentially higher analytical outcome, the overall A rating considers the utility's historically volatile financial performance, mid-range service area characteristics, and supply contracts renewal risks. OPDVive's revenue defensibility is supported by the district's very strong revenue source characteristics and high rate affordability. However, it is limited by a service area economy that is highly susceptible to economic downturns with historically high unemployment rates and weaker incomes compared to national levels. Favorably, customer concentration across the top 10 customers continues to decline. OPDVive has successfully controlled operating risks, as evidenced by a very low operating cost burden year over year, but rising natural gas costs will lead to elevated energy purchase prices and result in higher purchase power costs. Power costs will be partially mitigated by less expensive solar contracts that are scheduled to become operational in 2025. OPDVive's financial profile remains very strong as leverage continued to decline in fiscal 2022. Over the medium term, leverage may increase to about 6.9 times as district increases borrowing and executes its capital plans. However, the district's ability to raise rates as needed and ample unrestricted cash should maintain the leverage ratio supported by the current assessment. So overall, very positive. We started getting these ratings for bonds, but we continue these because there's a few reasons. One, this helps us for you guys and for the public to be able to see how we're doing and have an outside source that looks at when we've done borrowings, when we're using large amounts of capital, where does that sit? And then if we ever did want to do bonds in the future, we would have this history. So I think that this is good news and just something that I like to report. And I had a feeling that there would maybe be somebody in the room that would want to talk about that. So.
And just one other thing, Morgan Stanley and some of the power providers also take this into account when they ask for credit from us. And since we have a couple of ratios that they watch and a good Fitch rating, they don't require any bond or anything from us to, or a letter of credit to back up the power purchases. So that, yes, that helps that as well.
Thank you for that, because if you guys remember when we did our contract with Tamarack, that was part of the reason that we did not have to do a cash deposit. It was tied back to our Fitch rating and our cash levels, very comparable to what we have with Morgan Stanley.
Is this the same rating we had last year?
Yes. Okay, so let's talk about financials.
Just before we go on from that, I've talked to them the last 2 years about what it would take for us to increase our rating. And they've pointed out that in one of those middle paragraphs that because of our local economy and demographics, that it's going to be hard for us to ever get above an A rating. So until the economy, until we get more economic development in our area, where right now we're a construction-type industry and a casino-type industry, they won't move us above an A rating.
Okay, we're going to talk about our December numbers. I want to remind you guys that these are estimated numbers as we have not received actual on the majority of our power billings. And then we do still have a few year-end numbers that we are wrapping up with the as we start the audit process. So for the month of December, our operating revenue was $3,595,000. Our cost of purchased power was at $1,975,000. That contributed to our total cost of electric service on line number 20 of $3,265,000. On line number 22, you can see that our operating margins interest received on investments for the month was $142,000. If you go over to column B, you can see that that puts us at $1,275,000 that we have made on those investments. If you follow that column all the way down, that puts our annual margins at $12,047,000. On the asset side of our balance sheet, our net utility plant and service right now has a value of $119 million. We have investments in associated organizations, cash, materials, and other assets, giving us a total asset value of $174,745,000. On line number 36, on the liability side, you can see that our total margins and equities is now at $115 million. We have long-term debt, accounts payable, and other deferred credits, giving us, again, a total liability value of that $174 million. Here we have a breakdown of that cash. You can see that we ended the month with $2 million, $2,003,000. That is a decrease from the prior month. If you remember, in December, we make our long-term debt payment to CFC. That is just under $1.5 million. We also moved some money back and forth between the Goldman Sachs to maximize those investments at that time. So at the bottom of the page, you can see that our Morton asset value of those investments is now at $34.1 million, and our Goldman Sachs is at $4.5 million. On the right-hand side of each of those columns, we've broke out for you what the interest received for the year was, just so that you can see what our return was. Here is a breakdown of the security type, which is the investment types that we have with Morton, and then the duration of those investments. Here is a breakdown of each one of those investments and what the return is on those. The average rate of all of those is now at 4.2%. In December, we closed the month with 18,274 customers. Our modified debt service coverage is at 2.74. Our equity as a percentage of assets is at 66.28 and TIER at 7.47. We received 12 connect fees for $5,562. That for the total for the year means that we have received in 2023 376 connect fees for a total of $210,000. That number is just slightly lower than what Corey reported that was actually connected. Now, you remember that they pay their connect fee, and then when the job is done, it's actually connected. So there's always a bit of a lag. Some of those that Corey's crew has connected were paid for in 2022 and started in 2023, and same for us. We will have some that are on our books now that they will not do that work until 2024.
If I could jump in here for just a second, too, while you're on this topic. Corey reported that they connected 408 lots. We're showing on our last slide that we put about 374 meters on there. So what that tells me is we're starting to build up inventory a little bit in our system. That's not too bad out of whack, but when we had the slowdown in 2008, the inventory built up to about 1,000 different lots. So right now we're starting to build inventory, but we're not to a dangerous level yet, but it's something we can continue to monitor.
We currently have 41 residential billing arrangements and 2 commercial arrangements. And our roundup programs, we offered those checks, and so for this month we've started over. We have $529 in the kitty for Virgin Valley and $440 for Moapa Valley, and we'll continue that throughout the year until next year. This is a breakdown of our long-term debt. As I mentioned, we had that payment that was due on December 31st, and that was paid in full and on time.
Back on that other slide, in 2024 we have a repricing chance.
Yes.
And I noticed that the interest is 3.26.
Yeah.
But aren't we getting 4% on our money?
Yes.
Pretty good.
This is a breakdown of revenue by customer class. I know that I present this to you and you can't see it in the screen, but I like to put it out for you guys early so that you have some comparison, and I like for you guys to be able to review by the different types of customer class. But we'll zoom in here to the bottom so that you can see our monthly cost for December was at 5 cents, our monthly revenue was at 11 cents, and our 2023 average cost is at 5 cents. Now, you guys will remember that our Morgan Stanley contract moved to $44.35 a megawatt, or 4 cents. But we see that we have a difference. We have some hydro. We were receiving some of that layoff, but then we also have transmission costs that are included in that. So that 23 average cost of that, it would be $50.20 for a megawatt, or what we report in KWH is 5 cents. That is very comparable to what I predicted for our budget, just so we can tie up what's the average for the month. And that concludes my financial presentation, unless you guys have any more questions for me. Oh, no, it doesn't. I have one more thing. We've been in contact with our auditor. He came and did he was in-house at the end of December to do the physical check of our inventory, which was very successful. We have 2 new warehousemen that this is their first year, and this was the first time that they did inventory by themselves, and they did a wonderful job. I received excellent compliments from our auditor, one on how amazing our yards and warehouses look, the organization that they've done. Also, our warehousemen have come up with their own spreadsheets to make the counts easier and easier to follow. Our auditor was very complimentary of that. He does, however, have a scheduling conflict. Normally, he reports to you guys in March of each year, and this year he has requested if he could come and report in April instead because of staffing conflict. So I just want to give you guys a heads up, and I told him I didn't see that that would be a problem, but that was not my decision to make. That's for you guys to okay. So if you're okay with that, I'll move that to the April meeting. Okay, Chad said yes, so now I'm done.
Item H, review and possible approval to appoint 2024 voting delegates, alternative voting delegates, and appointees.
Okay, so every year we go through and make sure that everybody is still willing and able to serve in these different capacities. As I met with Judy for the agenda meeting, she asked to be removed from some of these temporarily. And so we have some spots to fill. I hope that you were able to go through and look at those and see which ones we need to fill and which ones you want to stay on. So I'll turn it over to you guys to talk your way through. First one is the NRECA voting delegate.
Is there anybody that wants to be the delegate? Mike, you are the alternate voting delegate, and I cannot do it this year.
I'm following in your footsteps. Your leadership is helped me develop into the person that could succeed you, perhaps, or something.
I'm like, okay, where's the joke? Do you want to go ahead and become the delegate?
Sure, I'll be glad.
Okay, so.
Oh, we do need an alternate then.
Yeah, we'll need an alternate then. Any volunteers?
I can back him up. He got me into this.
Okay.
And I'll train you well.
Okay, then our next one is, district is a member of the National Rural Utilities Cooperative Finance Corporation. CFC will conduct an annual business meeting in conjunction with the National Rural Electric. Currently, Mike Young is the CFC voting delegate. I was the alternate. Do you still want to be the voting delegate, Mike?
Yeah, I'll be glad to be that.
Okay, then who would like to be the alternate? Volunteers?
Does that take place at the regional or the national meeting?
The voting typically happens at the national meeting. But sometimes there's business to do at the regional meeting, but not always.
Yeah. So I wanted to find out if you're at the regional.
When is the regional due to happen?
It's September 24th or something like that of this year. You have that, Becky?
Maybe. No. I think it is the 23rd, 24th.
Of September?
The week of the 23rd in September.
Yes.
Okay. Nobody's volunteering. I probably, by that time, should be fine, too. But don't expect me to do anything sooner than that.
It is the 20th week of the
23rd. Okay. And the Region 9 meeting will be in Sacramento this year.
Where?
Sacramento.
Yeah.
Oh, my favorite town.
It's the capital.
Okay,
of
so that'll be Mike. That'll be Mike as the delegate and myself as the alternate. Next one is the district's insurance claims underwriters, Federated Rural Electric Insurance Exchange, better known as Federated. Federated will hold its board of directors election in conjunction with the National Rural Electric Cooperative Association. Regional meeting. By appointing a voting delegate, the district has the opportunity to participate in the election. These positions may be filled by trustee or staff.
I can continue to fill that one.
Richard is going to stay with that one. And Jack, you were the alternate. Do you want to continue?
Now let's get staff to do it.
Okay. Okay, this is to do with insurance. Does anybody on staff want to volunteer? Okay.
So I'll do that for this year since I will be the one that's there.
I don't know if we can unleash you and Richard at the same time at the same meeting.
That should be a concern to you.
I've ridden in trucks with you and I know.
You've been there.
Okay, so we'll put, oh, that's recorded too. And we'll put Mendez as the alternate for this year. Okay, next is the district is a member of the Nevada Rural Electric Association, NREA, conducts an annual meeting and holds 2 to 3 additional meetings per year. The district has 2 voting delegates, a board appointee and the general manager on the board. Jack, do you want to stay on as the voting delegate?
Absolutely.
Okay. Dale, do you want to stay on as the alternate?
Sure.
Oh, wait. Yeah, it has to, oh, 2 delegates, yeah. So you want to stay on?
Sure.
Okay. And Mendez gets to stay on. Want to or not. Okay, next. The district is a member of the Silver State Energy Association, SSEA, conducts an annual meeting and holds 1 of 3 additional meetings per year to conduct business. The district appoints a trustee to serve on the SSEA Board of Directors. Jack, do you want to continue to serve on that?
He loves that one.
We're hanging in there.
Okay, we're hanging in
there. Yeah, we're going to withdraw from SSEA at some point. Okay. But we're waiting for a couple of things, a couple of right-of-ways to be resolved before we leave the organization.
Okay, so we still need it at this point?
Yeah, we still need to participate.
And Chad is the alternate?
Jack handles it, so it's really nothing.
Okay.
Well, they elected me vice president, so it's very prestigious.
Wow.
Wow.
Did they give you a pin or notebook or something?
Pretty much the finger.
That's
Okay, so Chad, are you going to be the alternate? Did you say yes?
You said yes.
Okay. The district is a member of Pioneer Utility Resources, that's PUR, holds an annual meeting to conduct business. The district appoints a trustee to serve as a voting delegate and as the alternate. Currently, Mike Young is a voting delegate and Chad Levitt serves as the alternate voting delegate. Anybody want to jump in there or are you too happy?
So they have their meeting, but it's usually up in the Northwest, like Portland or somewhere like that, and we haven't gone to that.
Yeah,
so.
I know.
So.
But if we ever need to, we'll call on you.
Yeah, I can take a vacation up there. If they ever have a meeting, I need to go to.
Okay.
I'm going to Portland in April.
Oh, well, maybe the
do you guys want to swap?
That means you two are there.
Don't give me the finger, Jack.
So let's go back here. So staff recommend. I have a blank page where it says staff recommends.
Well, you read at the very bottom.
So we're going to start with the NRECA, right?
Well, if you just read the motion.
Okay, I'm reading the motion. Okay, to approve. Okay, so you wrote them all down?
Yes, I have them right down.
I did too, but I'll leave yours. I make a motion to approve the 2024 voting delegates as determined during the discussion period.
Second.
Were you through reading?
What?
Were you through reading?
Yeah.
You were not going to read them all?
No, she has them written down. She said ask for discussion, and I actually have them written down here too.
Okay.
If you all want to be sure, we will read through them. Does anybody want them to be read through?
I think Becky does a wonderful job.
I think Becky does a great job. Okay.
Just attach them to the minutes, then, if you will.
I made a motion.
Mike
seconded it. All in favor, say aye.
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 I mean, all in favor to approve?
True.
Say aye.
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 No nays? Okay.
Do I pull up the PowerPoint there, Stephen, too?
Yeah.
Okay. Item I, discussion on rates. This is for discussion only.
Does that move it forward or back?
This one right here is forward.
Okay. Okay, I wanted to give you an update on rates. So we've had a lot of different things going on, and so I wanted to give you an update, and I'll give you a little bit of an overview before we do the update. So the Overton Power portfolio mix, you can see that right now we're supplied by hydropower and a market-based purchase power contract, 80-20. The hydropower makes up 20. You can see there on the right-hand side that in 2025, when the solar comes on, that they're going to pick up 13% of our load, and it basically takes all of that away from market-based purchased power. Our hydro allocation stays the same. So next we'll talk a little bit about the terms of the contracts. You can see that Hoover is a 50-year contract that will expire in 2068. We just renewed that in 2018, and boy, was that a process. That was a real process. After that ended in 2018, we started renewing the CRISP contract, and that was pretty much wrapped up last year. And that's going to be a 30-year contract. Probably this year, we'll start discussions on renewing the Parker Davis contract. Last discussion that we had with the Colorado River Commission, the federal government is looking at doing a new allocation with the Parker Davis contract like they did with Hoover. They will take away 5% or some number and give it to new allottees. We opposed that at that meeting, and the reason that I gave is because they're really not giving the allocation to new customers. What they're doing is taking our customers and giving them a direct allocation. So they're really not, I mean, on the federal books, yeah, that's a new customer, but it's really a customer that's had hydropower all along through us. So it doesn't accomplish what they think it accomplishes. I haven't heard back from them if they agree with that, so we'll see as those discussions go along. Our market-based contract expires right at the end of 2024, beginning of 25, and our PV solar contract will be a 25-year contract. It is due to come online next year, so it'll expire in 2050.
I had a question on that.
Yeah.
What happens if they're not ready and we're counting?
So we have some penalties baked in there if they're not ready that they have to pay for our power costs if they don't come online, because we'll be paying a higher price. Yeah, they'll pay the difference on that, yes.
That's in our contract.
That's in our contract. No, they have to come online by June 1st.
June 30th.
June 30th, 25.
Yeah, 25.
They anticipate coming online March 15th, but they have to start paying us penalties on July 1. They have a 90-day window that all bankers require, that they have that window of leeway.
Okay, so as we get into this discussion, this is the data on our Morgan Stanley contract. You can see that it was for a term of 8.5 years. It started in 2016. Our price started off at about $51 a megawatt hour, and then it dropped to $44 a megawatt hour. It was declining. And the key duties that Morgan Stanley performs are firm power supply, and it's load following, so they fill in the gaps. They provide firm transmission service, load forecasting, scheduling, and they optimize the resources. The optimization typically occurs with the hydro. They schedule that to our benefit when it's most financially economical. So that's really the only wiggle room they have, is to work with their hydro to schedule that. But they do that. So what kind of things do we need to do for our next PPA? So those things that I just talked about, but also the services and the relationship are very important to us. We've had a very good relationship, and we've received a lot of benefits from Morgan Stanley. They've done a number of studies and performed some helps for us. They've been very good to work with. But one of the things that we need to really be thinking about is the length or the term of the contract, how we want that to be. And then we're going to have two choices. Are we going to blend and extend the Morgan Stanley contract in April of this year, or are we going to let this contract ride out and then renew it at the end of the year? So those are the two decisions we're going to have to make probably over the next couple of months. Because if we want to blend and extend, the only way we're going to be able to capture any of the value of that is to do it by April. And if we miss that deadline, then we might as well just ride it out through the end of the year. So those are a couple things that we're going to have to be working on over the next couple of months. So what are some of the challenges associated with it? Well, the current market is really quite a mess. There's competition for diminishing firm resources. That's fossil fuels. Even on the CAISO market, which is designed to promote renewables, the firm fossil fuel resources are being bid up to unbelievable prices, and it pushes entities like us out to the side. There's also, we talked about earlier in my report about transmission challenges. That continues partially because of this FERC problem and the BLM problem, that they're not putting in new transmission lines, and there's backlogs, and we're still waiting for permitting. And as long as there's a backlog, we're going to continue to have electric emergencies in the future, because in California and in the Northwest, they take those lines out of service every time a significant windstorm comes through, because they want to prevent wildfires. So that's a big challenge for us. The other big thing is the forward natural gas prices. And then you couple those things with increasing electric demand. You know, the federal mandates or goals that they have drive electric vehicles and almost everything to electric use. And they're doing that while not permitting new projects, not permitting new transmission lines, and it's causing stress on the grid.
What's the latest forward natural gas prices right now?
We've seen them come down a little bit, but I'll go to the next one here. They fluctuate pretty rapidly from week to week. It's not really a day-to-day. It's usually a week-to-week or month-to-month thing on those forward prices. But we have seen them come down, and that's why we think that we might have to really push this blend and extend over the next few months if that's the direction that we want to go, just because they fluctuate so fast, and they did come down a little bit. And so we're probably going to have to make a decision what price is good enough. We're going to have to set a floor on there or a goal and make some type of strategic guess on how we do that, because if we sit and wait, it's just going to continue to go up and down, and it might just go up. We don't know. So we're going to look at that closely.
You're saying blend and extend. How long would the extend period be, or would it be just a continuation for the 5 years or 6 years?
So as we've talked to Morgan Stanley, they've told us that they expect the market to change in 2027. And when we signed our contracts years ago, our contracts, well, and we still do this, we're on a monthly contract. It's a month load following. Mm-hmm. The market has gone to hourly scheduling, but we don't have to do that, at least not yet, until we become a full NITS customer. We become a full Nevada Power NITS customer 4 years after the new line is built to Tortoise Substation. So in 4 years, we'll be on that hourly scheduling. By 2027, they're going to try to convert the market to 5 minute scheduling. Every 5 minutes, you have to schedule your loads. And the reason they're doing that is because every time a gust of wind comes up, blows a windmill, they want to be able to sell it into the market.
Or a cloud.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's what's driving that, is the renewables. So that's going to be a real challenge, not necessarily for us directly, because we don't do our own scheduling, but it's going to create a lot more work for Morgan Stanley, who does our scheduling, because they're going to have to do that constantly. Mm-hmm. And we'll probably have to have perhaps even a person assigned to our account that just does that. Mm-hmm. And so that's going to drive our prices up a little bit.
Can you tell us what's the benefit or the against benefit of
the blend and extend? The blend and extend is... right now we're buying at $44 a megawatt hour. You can see here that I've seen prices up to $110 to $115. That means if the prices stay elevated at $110, we can take some of that savings over the next 9 months and spread that over the contract, maybe bring it down $5 or something like that over the term that we have. And that's one thing we'll have to decide, is what kind of term. Do we want to try and get to 2027 and see how the market shakes out? Do we want to go to 2028 and see if things settle in? Or I don't think that we want to go longer than that, because it exposes us to a lot of uncertainty. And I'm sure that we'll pay for that uncertainty in the market as well.
Sure.
So we're seeing during certain hours of the day, prices have reached $1,600 to $5,000 per megawatt hour on the spot market. When they had
wrong days, isn't it?
It is. Well, it's worse than that.
Yeah, they were up to $1,000.
Yeah. We saw $1,600 per megawatt hour prices in California when they had the emergency here about a year ago. And in Texas, when they had the problem there, that's where we saw the $5,000 per megawatt hour prices on the market. So having a contract in place that keeps us out of those spot market prices directly is a good thing. So let's move on to some of the future market conditions. Generation and transmission are going to stay the same for the next while, until permitting or policy changes. It's one of the things I talked about with our legislators when we were in Washington, D.C. If you don't change the policy, the market's not going to change. Our federal energy policy is driving some of these things. There is, I'm talking about the 5-minute market here, And then the other thing we have to be concerned about is legislation that was passed that says that Nevada has to join one of these markets or create a market, and we're not big enough to create a market, so we'd have to join one of these by 2030. That's going to drive up some prices as well. So, again, I reiterated hours of the day become extremely high-priced. Part of the problem here is 7 in the morning, for example, is considered really on peak because the renewable resources haven't come online yet. So we see some of our highest prices at 7 in the morning, even though our peak occurs before that. A peak is usually between 6 and 7. From 7 to 8, the system sees a peak because the other things have dropped off online and the renewables haven't come online yet. And so it drives the prices in that 1 hour. And then you see the same thing at night. Our peak is usually somewhere between 3:30 and 6:30, but the high prices are starting to come in at hours 21 and 22 because all the renewables have dropped off, all the batteries have run out of power, and people are scrambling for resources. And there's not enough fossil fuels to support those, and not enough batteries to support those. And then again, electric demand will continue to increase, and it'll keep elevated prices for the next while. So here's some of the things that we've done to try to work our way through this. We began working with power providers last year to discuss what we wanted to do. We've been working with Tenaska and Morgan Stanley. We've talked about taking on just a little bit more risk in our contract. Right now, we're 100% load following, and we pay a premium for that. I've talked to some entities around us. One of them, for example, has 25% exposure to the market, and during the one weekend of the California electric emergency, they lost $8 million. And so we do not want to even approach that 25% level, but we can probably talk about somewhere between 5 to 8% exposure to the market. Sometimes that will benefit us because we'll be able to capture the lower rates, but sometimes, you know, we'll be exposed to the higher rates. But in the analysis we've done, we think that we can be in that range and be okay.
But the higher rates are dramatically higher, where the lower rates are small.
You're right. You're exactly so right.
You're risking big money for hopefully a small smidgen of return.
Well, what we've done is we've worked with Morgan Stanley, and they call it, they've given us what they call a shrapnel chart. And the shrapnel is, these are your power contracts, this is how much you buy, this is where you're short, and this is where you're long. And they tell us that in the past, they, with the load following 100%, they've been, to a certain degree, overbuying resources to cover those spots for us. Yeah. So in the long term, they feel like we've lost a little bit of money because of that.
That's a little.
Well, we might. We'll talk about that as we go along. Then we'll present both of those to you. But you guys are going to have to decide what you want to do. And I don't mind taking on a little risk, but I want it to be a little. And I want to avoid what you're talking about. We want to make sure that we don't get exposed to those things. So. Maybe 5% or less then is the number. We'll have to talk about that and decide.
Yeah, we'll be able to see both no risk and
yes.
Whatever you recommend.
Yeah, they'll give us some indicative pricing, and we'll look at those, and then we'll make a decision and go for it.
Well, I guess I'm assuming, too, like it sounds like you're talking about a 2 to 3 year contract. We'll be able to see, like I would love to have a longer one than that, if it's good.
Well, we'll have them give us prices on different terms as well. So we'll build kind of a matrix of choices for you so that you'll be able to make,
perfect,
hopefully a good decision.
That's what they did last time, wasn't it? Didn't they give us 3 or 4 decisions?
Yes, they did.
Length of time. And
yes. Yeah, and they gave us a lot of different options. And Morgan Stanley's very creative with doing things like that. Mm-hmm. And Tenaska tells me that they're going to do that, be creative too, because they want our business. So we'll see how it goes. We had CFC perform these three studies for us, the revenue requirements, the cost of service, and the rate studies, just to see where this puts us. Now, what they used was, at the time they did the study, market prices were at just a little over $104 a megawatt hour. So their studies are based on that. I'm not saying that's where we're going to be when we sign our contract. That was just the point in time when they did their study, and they will redo our study once we firm up our contract price. So some of the information I'm going to give you is based on that, and it's theoretical. So we talk about the solar, what a benefit it is to us. We've talked about implementing battery storage. It's very expensive, and I don't think that it's worthwhile for us. Although we did receive a grant to fund 50% of a battery storage contract up to $1 million, was it? So
How much is it?
That would buy us about half a megawatt.
Yeah, that's it. And do we have to put up any money?
Yeah, we'd have to. If we did a $2 million project, they would pay half and we would pay half.
Okay, yeah.
So we'll have to decide whether that's a good deal or not, too. But there's not enough really to move the needle, but that's how expensive battery storage is. So the results of the CFC studies, they say that overall we would have to have a 14.5% rate increase. What that translates to our residential customers is about 17%. At that rate of $104.35 a megawatt hour. We're hoping to get under that, way under that. The rate increase is driven 100% by the increase in purchase power. They said that there's very little to no cross-subsidization between our rate classes. So the industrial customers aren't subsidizing the businesses, and the businesses aren't subsidizing the residentials, and the residentials aren't subsidizing anywhere else. They say that we look pretty good in that way. They say that if we use the metrics that they have outlined, that our ratios will take a little bit of a hit, but we'll still be in a strong financial position. We'll still be able to maintain our ratios where our goals are, above where our goals are, and that we'll be able to continue to have the margins, not like we saw last year, but probably more a traditional margin where we're looking at roughly $5 million a year to do capital projects, which means that in the future we're going to have to borrow to do bigger projects as we go along. But that's, in normal circumstances, that's the way you do things. They also told us, they also confirmed for us that our PPA with the solar project is going to save us and our customers about $4 million per year. The big question is then, why don't you buy more solar? Well, it's because that's all we can use. If we buy more than this, we will be selling it into the market at a loss. So we can't take on any more solar. It will put us over our limits. And then CFC suggested that we don't make any immediate changes to the base charge. And we've talked about, you know, doing that in certain circumstances later, but they recommended not doing it at the same time as you do a rate increase.
At the same time.
At the same time.
Their recommendation was we needed to raise it up to, was it 48 or 50?
It's about $50, yeah.
About 50, somewhere yeah. in that range.
That's right. That's right. So here are the future steps that we've talked about, the blend and extend in April or negotiating a new contract at 24, just writing this out. Again, we'll need to identify the term of the PPA. We need to identify the appropriate amount of risk that we're willing to take on, if any. We'll explore partnerships with Boulder City to see if we can gain an economy of scale. After we do all those things, we are going to have to raise rates. We're not going to get a new contract at $44 a megawatt hour. That's not going to happen. And we're going to continue to look for ways to control costs. By the way, we are the lowest in the state according to the CFC ratios, that we're controlling our costs better than any other utility in the state. Thanks to you guys, too. So here's the effect of this. Right now, a residential customer pays on average, this is if you use 1,200 kilowatt hours, 7.9 cents. If we did what CFC is suggesting, that would take us up to 9.6 cents. You can see how that compares. The average in the state is 14.63. The average nationwide is 16.21. So it still keeps us below the average. It's higher than we want to be, but the market is just not very cooperative right now. So that would increase their bill by about $15 to $20 a month. Pardon me?
You just can't have two happy ones.
Yeah.
Well, not possible.
That presentation, is that something that you could email each of us a copy of it?
Yes.
Because
sure
I can't speak for the rest of them, but my retention is not... I don't remember all
Well, we blew through things pretty fast, so I'd be glad to send that to you.
I think it would be nice if we had a copy of it.
Okay.
That's number one. And number two, you said by April we need to make a decision. That only gives us February and March.
That's correct.
Because April has to be a decision.
And we've talked to CFC, and we're going to talk to the people from Morgan Stanley about being at our meeting in March.
Okay. And I think in February we need to have...
Pretty much decided. Is that right?
We're going to have to be down the road on a lot of issues here.
Yeah.
In February.
And that's why I think it's important that we get this so that we have, when we come to that next meeting and that presentation happens, we have a good understanding so that we don't make any mistakes.
I totally agree. So I'll be glad to.
I hate having meetings where we can't make mistakes.
But the next time we need to get our contract extended. A year beyond the election date.
Yeah, really.
You're exactly right. That's a real problem. That's a real problem.
When's the election is going to make a huge electrical difference.
There's so much uncertainty. Yeah, it changes so many things. Yeah.
Okay, are there any other questions or comments on this?
Good job on that presentation.
Thanks.
Excellent. Yeah, good explanation.
One question. Hey, Sharon, are we waiting for them or are we waiting for the price? We're waiting for something like why aren't we deciding a contract?
Because we're waiting for the price to get to the point where we want it.
Like if the price was $55 right now,
we'd have had a special session.
Yeah. Yes, we would.
Are we only getting this from Morgan Stanley, or is this something that we could monitor?
So I've talked to Tanaska and I've told him, I said, this is really skewed toward Morgan Stanley on the blend and extend. And he said, if you'll just get a number from Morgan Stanley and give me a chance to give you a price, he says, I'll just shoot you a number and you can tell me if you like that or not. And he said, if it's Morgan Stanley, that's good. But he said, just give me a chance to shoot you a price.
You know, from a lot of contracting jobs, price isn't the only thing.
Well, yeah, I agree.
With them, Morgan Stanley, I mean, obviously they've given us great service. At least it seems that way.
Yes, they have.
And that has a lot to do with the value, you know, a few cents one way, or that's a little bit one way or the other, it's not going to make a huge difference.
So, I think you're right, if Morgan Stanley were to give us a price, say, of 95 and Tanaska came in at 94, I think we would probably stick with Morgan Stanley because of that relationship.
Yeah.
But if Morgan Stanley came in at 95 and Tanaska came in at 85, well, we're probably going to switch providers.
Yeah, but that's pretty hard to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Just tell them we're going to do 45 if they get an increase.
That's true.
And she mentioned there have been as high as 110, 115, whatever. What's been low in the last 6 months?
So in the last year, I believe it's dipped down to about the 85 to 90 range. And we're hoping that we can capture that again, but I haven't officially received that word. That's just monitoring. That's not an indicative price. That's just what I've seen in the market.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if I want to hop this up or if we need to have a special session or something, I hope you guys will call us out.
Thank you.
This is a big deal to me.
It's a big deal to everybody in our service territory.
Whatever needs to happen.
Yeah. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah.
Any other questions or comments? Okay, let's go on to item J, review and possible approval of OPD policy OPDA-10.203 and the creation of a subcommittee to reward 2024 scholarships for possible action.
I, again, will speak against this. I think that we're much better served by internships, and the customer is served by internship because they get something out of it. A lot of these scholarships go to people that are long gone from here. And they're on their way to whoever it is that's better than our service area in a lot of ways for employment opportunities. And I think we should slowly trim this down. I think we're providing more internships this year, but potential for more internships. Am I right there?
We had a number approved of temporary workers and internships to fill those however we could fill those.
Yeah, I think the customer is better served by that. And I understand that the historic has been supporting the community. Nothing wrong with that. But I'd sure like to see this number shrink a little.
Okay. We already shrank it a little when we had this discussion year after year after year.
I know.
And I think I feel that we need to support the youth of our communities and give them the encouragement, give them that positive enforcement in their accomplishments and what they've done. I have sons that got scholarships for minimal ones like this. I'm not talking full ride scholarships, but I'm talking about these kind of minimal scholarships. And they remember to this day, and they're in their 50s now, how much it meant to them at the time to be recognized like that. And I for one, want them to go, yeah, you know, the power district where I grew up. They took care of us. It was $1,000 scholarship, and it helped me get my books, helped me do whatever. And sometimes, every once in a while, you're going to get one or two of them that are going to come back here, that are going to be an engineer, be a head of operations, or be our general manager. And if you can encourage a few of them in that way, I think we should. Okay. Anybody else have anything to say? It's just our battle line. Here you go. I can take that one down. Okay, well.
Right now we award eight to each ballot.
Yes.
Correct. Scholarship. Yeah. $16,000.
Right.
And I think that's a very, very well.
There's something to be said for citizenship and what it accomplishes there as well.
That won't go very far with interns, unfortunately. I don't know if that would get one.
Good point. Okay. I make a motion. I'm sorry, is there any more discussion or comments?
Is this for the committee, or are we?
I think we have to appoint a committee.
Okay.
This isn't about it.
We can do the committee and the
both. It's both, yeah.
How many scholarships you're doing, if you are, and then if you are doing scholarships, who's on the committee?
And it does, let's see, let me make sure, and it's approval of the policy, too, because we did make one minor change in the policy. Yes. Yes, we did.
What was the change?
I can't remember.
I see what it is.
See, you're not the only one.
No, to allow scholarships to be awarded to high school seniors who wish to attend a trade school or a civil
type of institution. That was it. Very good. That was the change.
Okay. Then I would like to make the following recommendation. To award eight $1,000 scholarships to Virgin Valley High School students and eight $1,000 scholarships to Moab Valley High School students. Each scholarship will be administered by the Moapa Valley Education Foundation and Virgin Valley High School. Also to appoint, what trustees would like to take care of?
Virgin Valley first.
Virgin Valley. Don't all jump in there. Okay. Can you be from Moaga Valley and do the Virgin Valley ones, or does it have to be a person from Virgin Valley?
You do, yeah.
Okay, I'll take one. I'll do a Virgin Valley one. And who else is going to do it?
I nominate Bob.
And Bob wants to do it too. And to appoint, what two trustees to determine the Moaga Valley High School?
Nominate Jack.
Jack for one.
Is that okay, Jack?
You bet.
Real good.
And who's going to be the other one?
I cannot serve on that because I'm the chairman of the MBEF.
And okay. I can't because I have kids.
And so I cannot.
And you have a kid, Jack?
I have a child who will be
consideration.
Bob, can a person be on both of them?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay, then I'll do that.
Yeah, or do you want, you could potentially do staff, right?
You could. You can do whoever you want.
Judy, you're the at-large position.
I can do both because I'm...
Yeah.
Okay, we're safe.
Why not? With you?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I'll do it with Jack.
I like that.
No.
No.
You're going to do it with Bob Bunker for Virgin Valley. How's that?
I do that.
Okay, thank you.
Again.
Okay, so we have Dale and Bob and Jack.
No.
Jack and... Okay. So,
well, it'll take a while to twist it around, but you accomplished it.
We got there. Okay, I'll make a motion that we accept the recommendation to award $8,000 scholarships to Virgin Valley High School students and $8,000 scholarships to Moaga Valley High School students. Each scholarship will be administered by Moaga Valley Education Foundation and Virgin Valley High School. Also to appoint Trustee Dale Rusk and Bob Bunker to determine the 2024 VVHS recipients and to appoint Jack Nelson and Judy Mentz to determine 2024 MVHS recipients. Do I hear a second?
To accept the modification or the revision to the policy as presented.
Okay, do I hear a second?
I'll
try that. It's been moved and seconded to follow that recommendation. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Me. Aye.
Okay. Got it.
Okay, then I won't finish writing. Okay, then we're going to...
Judy.
Yes,
question.
Sir?
That's $16,000. How much does an intern... for the summer?
So we approved about $58,000 for four interns and four temporary people. What do you think an intern is about?
It's 400 hours at about $15 an hour.
About $5,000. My daughter was an intern for the summer.
She was a good one too.
She was a good one.
I'll tell you, we had...
She sorted through all those
We boxes. Had three young ladies that were in her work, and they were phenomenal. They were phenomenal.
Of course they were.
Yeah. And they kept a little... they kept score on the chalkboard in there every day they didn't break something. They had didn't break anything today. Tick marks.
So that when this comes up next year, they can get you the figures on what's spent on interns in comparison to what's going to scholarships. So that
it would help. Yeah.
Right?
Right.
I mentioned $5,000 is pretty close.
Yes. I was going to divide the 58,000 by 7. That's 7,000. So we're going to be somewhere in that neighborhood.
53,000,
6,000, 7,000. Well, that is
15
hours.
Okay.
400 hours times $15 is 6,000.
Taxes taken out.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I can still, we pay the taxes. So.
I didn't even get your calculator.
OPD's going to pay whatever, Social Security or PERS, whatever they're doing.
We don't pay PERS.
At some point, can you get that out for them? Yes,
that's why we have the time limits in there, is because if we go over those, we have to pay PERS or insurance, other type of insurance benefits. So we keep them under that.
Item K, review and possible approval to fill the substation operations foreman position with possible action.
Okay, before we jump into that, I'm going to give you a little bit of an update so that as you look at the org chart, you can kind of see what's going on here. Since our last board meeting, we had one of our employees that came in after Christmas and said, I retire. They didn't want to come back to work, and so we lost a person over the Christmas holiday. We've moved a couple of people around, and we've made a new hire. Stephen, can you minimize this so we can see in Mesquite?
Oh, yeah.
Jonathan, do you want to wave to us?
Hi, Jonathan.
This is Jonathan Denninghoff, lives in Mesquite. He's accepted the job to work in our accounting department. And so he came to our board meeting tonight, and we're really excited to have him on board. Bring some good experience. So, and we're good to find, happy to find somebody local. So thank you, Jonathan. Thanks for coming tonight. Okay, now you can bring up the org chart, Stephen. Okay, so I talked about the position that we lost over on the billing portion, but what we're here to talk about tonight is the operations, substation operations foreman. Kevin and I have talked, and Kevin, I'm going to turn this over to you to talk a little bit more here in a second, but we've talked and we have the need and the work to have somebody that needs to direct and schedule things a little bit better and give Kevin some help. And so we've gone over some numbers together and looked at some different things. Kevin, what do you want to add to this?
So in the past, we've had kind of a small group, and it was pretty easy to do the day-to-day tasks. Everybody knew what they was doing, their jobs. And on, you know, special assignments, I would assign a certain person as a task or assignment. And it was working out pretty good, but we've increased the number of men or number of employees that we have in our department, and also the amount of equipment is probably about double in the last couple, 3 years. And so it really makes it a lot harder to keep track of everything. So that's why we feel we need that foreman position filled, so we have someone that can keep track of things, report back to me instead of me trying to, you know, get those projects divvied out to the guys. They can, you know, I'll have someone that's responsible for that, and they can report directly to me. I can find out what's going on and you know, make the department run smoother and more efficiently.
And so, thank you, Kevin. So this has been a spot that's been on the org chart that was approved as part of the org chart, but we've never filled it. But we feel now that with the manpower we have and the work that Kevin just outlined, that it would be prudent for us to fill that position. And that's what we're asking for, is to fill that. And we have three people within the department that we're going to talk to. And if this is approved, select one of them to be the foreman in the substation operations area.
Okay, I'm not quite clear. So this is a new position, or a position that we talked about before, but it hasn't had a person in it?
That's correct. So we had a person in there at one time. His name was Kevin Hansen. And so when we moved him to manager, we didn't backfill that position because there were only, at the time, two guys in there. But as we've kept growing and adding more equipment, we've had to add more people, and we think it's time to fill that position now.
So what position retired? So wasn't anybody in this?
Mm-hmm. Not since Kevin held that position. So it's been vacant for a couple of years.
It doesn't increase our...
No, we're not going to hire anybody. We're just going to move one of the internal guys to that position. We're not asking for anybody on the bottom end to fill that position, at least not yet.
It's more of a reorganization.
It's reorganization. We're not adding any more people. Okay. Just moving somebody around.
Was that in the budget?
Yes, we did include that in the budget. So if this is approved, it's budgeted for. And if it's if it goes unapproved, that money will just be excess that will stay in the budget.
Okay.
Kevin will still have to carry the whole load.
Yes, he will.
So, big shoulders, right?
I'll make a motion that we approve this.
Dale, do you have a question?
The fellow that resigned over the holiday.
Yes.
Not on your chart.
So, it was somebody that's on the org chart, and we're going to hire for that position. But again, we're just filling an existing position, and we're not adding to the org chart. But we will hire somebody to take her place. We did have one person already training in that area, so we're succession plan wise, we're in good shape. Doesn't hurt us too bad. But we need to get another person in the queue. So we would like to backfill that position. But again, that we're not adding anybody. We're just filling a hole.
Okay. Did you make the motion yet, or did you start it?
Yeah, I started it, but they interrupted me. I actually will make a motion that we approve fill a substation operation foreman position.
I'll second that motion. It's been moved and seconded to approve filling the substation operations foreman as presented. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any public comments? Any board comments? Can I hear a motion for approval of the next board meeting, February 21st, 2024?
I move that we have a next meeting, February 21st.
I'll second it.
Dale already seconded. Nice try. It's been moved and seconded. The next board meeting will be February 21st at 3 p.m. in the Mesquite Boardroom. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, we're going to, tell me the right way, Byron. We're going to adjourn this meeting and go into executive session.
I make a motion that we adjourn this meeting.
And we need to go into or we can do it together, whatever.
Okay, and go into executive session. It's been moved by Jack, seconded by Mike, to adjourn this meeting and go into executive session. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?